This will be my first Memorial Day without my father. He passed on March 23rd, 2018. In the years of outreach to veterans, Memorial Day became sort of my father's Super Bowl. The watchfires, first and foremost, were one of his biggest and earliest forms of outreach. Events brought attention, brought people out of the woodwork, and a conversation began. A healing process, a very necessary one. By the mid-1980s, my father had learned that more Vietnam vets had taken their own life after the war than actually died in the conflict. A truly alarming statistic that no one has seemed to find a cure for, as we lose 22 combat veterans a day to their own hand. My father believed that the only soldiers that didn't come home from war with PTSD were the ones that just didn't come home. The dead, he would say, are the only ones who truly escape it. Even as a young child, I was well aware of the effects of war. Car backfires would cause us to hit the deck of his pickup truck. Phantom pains would grip his leg that wasn't there. But it became normal. It was the way it was. He was never afraid to explain it or talk about it. Any questions you had about the war, the politics of the time, being drafted, Ranger training, and eventually war itself. October 24th, 1969, my father received 3 Purple Hearts. Early that day, in an open field, he was hit with sniper fire, but luckily grazed. Later that night, a shot took a more direct hit into his lower right leg, causing great damage. In the middle of the chaos of battle, fellow soldiers got my father to a nearby makeshift foxhole. The rest of the story, I will read in his own words. This is a piece my father wrote for Purple Heart magazine for the July-August 2016 edition. It's entitled, Just Another Day at the Office, by Jerry Donnellan.
I can turn the gray sky blue.
I can make it rain whenever I want it to.
Oh, I can build a castle from a single grain of sand.
I can make a ship sail on dry land.
But my life is incomplete and I'm so blue. Cause I can't get next to you.
Can't get next to you, baby.
Next to you.
Can't get next to you.
Just can't.
It was the 24th of October, 1969. We were on a search and clear operation, which a few months earlier would have been called a search and destroy mission. I was an infantry buck sergeant, 3rd Platoon, Company D, 3rd of the 21st, 169th Light Infantry Brigade, working off LZ Center. It was home, although we spent very little time there. Most of our time was spent in what we called Indian Country, wandering the Central Highlands. The highlands from a distance looked like the Catskills. Only the vegetation was a bit different. They called this triple canopy jungle. It was so dense that at noon on a sunny day, the floor of the jungle would seem like nighttime. The temperature and humidity both were around 100. And to add to the fun of this sleepaway camp, we had to carry between 80 and 100 pounds on our back, 8 pounds of which was water that was far more valuable than a number of other things we carried, especially food. In those days, it was sea rats, or sea rations. Some of which you literally couldn't eat. We would pray that we got resupplied before we got to the bottom of our rations and had to eat that. This stuff would truly gag a maggot. To give you an idea of the toll it takes, when I got to Vietnam at age 23, I was 6'2", weighed 185 pounds, and was in reasonably good shape. When I got home, I weighed 122 pounds. To be fair, part of that weight loss was my right leg, but still, even considering that, it's a fair amount of weight to drop in a relatively short time. Anyway, it happened on Hill 370, a couple of clicks off the LZ. I remember it was the loudest thing I had ever heard. There was a huge fireball and I was thrown, I'm guessing 10 yards, landing on my back. My 12 gauge was gone. According to the Geneva Convention, we weren't supposed to have scattershot weapons, but they issued Model 37 Ithaca pumps. The Army also gave me a duper gun, M79, a canister round, which made the 79 a supersized shotgun. But then again, I never saw a referee out there to enforce any of these rules. So I picked up my right arm, and it fell off mid-shaft, between the wrist and the elbow, what they call a double compound fracture, 2 bones sticking out of each half of a bloody hunk of meat. Using my left arm, which had also been wounded, I carefully placed my broken right arm across my chest and lifted my left leg up to try to see if I could push my way back to cover. That leg was riddled with shrapnel. I carefully placed it down and lifted up my right leg. It was gone. That was kind of hard to wrap your head around. Even though I didn't feel the pain, at least the kind of pain you'd think would accompany what I was seeing. There was a terrific burning sensation. I tried to prop myself up on my left elbow to see if I could see anyone. However, leaning forward caused a bloody head wound to run into my eyes, which blinded me. Just then, I felt someone grab me. Not being able to see, I didn't know if it was the enemy or one of my own guys. Of all the things that were going on, that was simply the most terrifying. I was totally helpless. He started working on me. He shot me up with morphine for the pain. But as the drug began to take effect, I didn't know if it was the drug entering my body or life leaving it. The guy who went to that war didn't come home. I believe that was the case for a lot of us. I don't know how much time passed, but my buddies eventually got me onto a poncho. Every time they moved, it hurt. But it had to be done. Then I saw the greatest sight in the world, the belly of that dust off, which close to 20 years later became the logo of our Vietnam veterans group. But it just brought more pain. The downdraft of the rotor blades was so strong that it began opening my wounds that had started to heal. My buddies literally threw me onto the floor of that Huey, which was awash with the blood of the other wounded. Then we were out of there and on our way to Hawk Hill. At Hawk Hill, I was placed on a real stretcher. In turn, the stretcher was placed on a pair of sawhorses. A guy came toward me with one of those bent surgical scissors. I thought he was coming to help me. Instead, he cut away the right saddlebag pocket and took my AO map that was wrapped in an A&P RC-25 battery bag. I was pissed. It seemed maps were more important than I was. I lay there for what seemed like a long time. I was put onto a cleaner Huey and sent off to the 95th EVAC in Da Nang. I refused to go to sleep for fear that I would never wake up. I came off that chopper in Da Nang, and who was waiting for me but the chaplain? Last rites may help the soul, but they don't do much for morale. Then into the OR, which was ice cold. There, they finally knocked me out. The next week or so was mostly a blur. I went from there to the 106th in Yokota, Japan. Following surgery, I was beginning to feel better. I could tell, because I was getting pissed again. Here I was, damn near killed, and nobody seemed to give a damn. Everybody else was just doing their day-to-day routine. It was just another day at the office, or hospital. There were no parades, no bands, nothing. I was moved out of Japan after God knows how many more surgeries. It was November, and we headed into Anchorage, Alaska at night. It was snowing, and all we were wearing were light PJs. The blood we had left was thin from the tropics. As we moved into the U.S., they kept us pretty drugged up. It was easier to deal with us, because we were all starting to feel a little better. By the time light had begun to break, we were approaching McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey, which sits side by side with Fort Dix. By the time we landed and got loaded off the plane onto ambulances, it was full daylight. It seemed like the ambulance was going 100 miles per hour or more. At Walsen Army Hospital at Fort Dix, my family came to visit. Except for my wife, who was in her 9th month of pregnancy. The rest of the family showed up and lied and lied and lied about how good I looked. Later, my brother told me I looked like someone who had just come out of Auschwitz. The next morning, they loaded me into the cleanest Huey I had ever seen. My stretcher was so high and going from left to right on the bird behind the pilot and co-pilot's head, so I could see over their shoulders. We took off nose down, as Hueys have a tendency to do, and headed west to Valley Forge Army Hospital, Pennsylvania. As soon as we cleared the tree, the co-pilot took out a Texaco road map that was marked for Valley Forge. This was the army I knew and loved. As the chopper banked coming into Valley Forge Hospital, I saw men in colonial uniforms in nice straight lines, setting up by the side of a vintage cannon. Well, I figured it's about time I got some kind of reception fit for what I had been through. Not really. I lost track of what day it was. It turned out we just happened to be landing at 11 a.m. on November 11th. Wasn't about me at all. It was Veterans Day, and I'd just landed in the middle of their ceremony. But what was cool was the 4 guys that carried my litter off the chopper were all amputees, and I thought maybe this could work. I tell you this because there are 58,000 who can't, and someone should speak for them. That was Just Another Day at the Office, by Jerry Donnellan, narrated by Sean Donnellan.
I can turn the gray sky blue.
I can make it rain whenever I want it to.
Oh.
Just 17 days after that Veterans Day in 1969, I was born. I was lucky to have met my father. I was even luckier to have him be my father for 48 years. I miss him every minute of every day. My father's life was saved in Vietnam. Somehow, some way. But as he said in his own words, there's a part of every combat soldier that never makes it home. As we honor those who were lost in combat, let's not forget those who indeed lost a part of themselves, but physically survived. Let's keep them close, keep them talking, and do our best to give them all the help they need, and so rightly deserve.